Please turn to Psalm 64.
Psalm 64. This psalm will have a relevance to the topic that we are going to preach on today, God willing. Hear my voice, O God, in my prayer. Preserve my life from fear of the enemy. Hide me from the secret counsel of the wicked, from the insurrection of the workers of iniquity, who whet their tongue like a sword and bend their bows to shoot their arrows, even bitter words, that they may shoot in secret at the perfect. Suddenly do they shoot at him and fear not. They encourage themselves in an evil matter. They commune of laying snares privily. They say, who shall see them? They search out iniquities. They accomplish a diligent search, both the inward thought of every one of them and the heart is deep. But God shall shoot at them with an arrow. Suddenly shall they be wounded. So they shall make their own tongue to fall upon themselves. All that see them shall flee away. And all men shall fear and shall declare the work of God. For they shall wisely consider of his doing. The righteous shall be glad in the Lord and shall trust in him. And all the upright in heart shall glory. And God add his blessing. What I have to address today, and this will be, God willing, the beginning of a short series, and I'm entitling this, Mind Your Own Business. Some of this will be familiar information, but I think it behooves us to review things with which we have been familiarized already in light of what we have not yet considered in the upcoming days. In the culture in which we live, we are going to be facing some very big difficulties. I am much persuaded about that. Our Bible teaches us that it is the sole province of our God to have full insight into everything that we think and everything that we do. In Hebrews chapter 4 and verses 12 through 13, for the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. Now keep in mind, this is speaking about our Lord Jesus Christ, the eternal Word who was made flesh, that he is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. He knows the thoughts of men, and he knows the intentions of men. Neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and opened under the eyes of him with whom we have to do. This is the unique province of our God. That is, this is his realm of influence, his sphere of power. And it is his alone to have absolute knowledge of all things at all times. Omniscience is the word we use to describe this. There's not a thought that we consider. There is not an intent that we have. There is not an action that we perform that is hidden from him. All things are naked and open indeed under the eyes of him with whom we have to do. Now, that's God. Now, do you know of a sinner who should be trusted to assume power like that? I wouldn't trust myself with it. Do you tinker with that kind of power, with technology? And this is what we're going to have to be addressing. Man's fall was brought on by a desire to know more than was appropriate. It goes all the way back to the beginning, doesn't it? Even in innocency, the potential for knowledge that was not necessary was what brought man down. In Genesis chapter 2 and verse 17, in the garden before sin, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. Now we know what happened in the next chapter. The serpent comes along, and he convinces Eve that, well, what God really meant was, verse 5, for God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. My point in this particular passage is that there was obviously a limitation of knowledge that God imposed, even in innocency, in the garden. They were not to partake of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Satan corrupted the very instruction of God to imply that God was misleading Adam and Eve, and really they would be as gods if they didn't do what God said. And that's where the sin came in. Our Lord Jesus warned of a season when nothing would be covered, assumed privacy would be out the window. It would be a faulty assumption to think that privacy was carefully guarded. In Luke chapter 12, and this is one of about three or four places in Mark and Luke where our Lord Jesus makes reference to this principle, and I maintain that there were immediate applications in the days in which the apostles lived, but I think we'll see that it extends beyond their days as well. In Luke chapter 12, in verses 1 through 3, in the meantime, when there were gathered together an innumerable multitude of people, insomuch that they trode one upon another, he began to say unto his disciples, first of all, beware ye of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. For there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, neither hid that shall not be known. Therefore, whatsoever ye have spoken in darkness shall be heard in the light, and that which ye have spoken in the ear and closet shall be proclaimed upon the housetops. The implications of this in the days of the apostles, I'm sure they appreciated. And I think we can appreciate the implications of this translated to our own generation, because privacy is gone. And you're deluded if you think that it isn't gone. Nothing is secret anymore. Commercially, employers know more about you than you remember about yourself. They scrape the internet to find out things that you said that you hadn't even remembered that you'd written. Governments intruding every day into every aspect of our lives. Businesses that monitor you from the moment you enter the property and even before that, and monitor your every movement while you're in their places of business. You've got one of those devices in your pocket? They're monitoring every movement. Every place that device goes, they're following you. Every act. It's not just a matter of store cameras watching for theft and fraud. That's not the only issue. The system in which we lived is basically a complete surveillance system. And our country maybe isn't even as far advanced down that road as is the United Kingdom, which is a scary proposition. Well, what about this business of looking, and looking sometimes where you shouldn't be looking? God actually preserves even hidden things of darkness from being prematurely judged. It's not like God didn't know what was happening, but he set in place rules by which things were to be considered, investigated, and when the time was right and only then to be acted upon. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 5, Paul says, therefore, judge nothing before the time until the Lord come, who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness and will make manifest the counsels of the hearts, and then shall every man have praise of God. It is the teaching of Scripture that even in the event of where someone is in fact guilty of an infraction against the law of God, that that person should be cut a measure of slack until evidence is sufficient to bring something to light, and only then should judgment take place. This is far different than undertaking a pre-investigative snoop into everybody's lives to see what you can dig up on them. Big difference between those two things. And we have, by the way, all been gradually enticed to offer up private information about ourselves and about what we know about other people, put it on the internet. And it is far too easy to snoop where there's no clear and present call for such a diligent inquisition as we read of in Deuteronomy. There are three passages in Deuteronomy which speak of diligent inquiry, inquisition. In Deuteronomy 13, we'll catch this at verse 12. If thou shalt hear say in one of thy cities, here's hearsay evidence. If thou shalt hear say in one of thy cities, which the Lord thy God hath given thee to dwell there, saying, certain men, the children of Belial, are gone out from among you, and have withdrawn the inhabitants of their city, saying, let us go and serve other gods, which ye have not known. Then shalt thou inquire and make search and ask diligently, and behold, if it be truth and the thing certain that such abomination is wrought among you, thou shalt surely smite the inhabitants of that city with the edge of the sword, destroying it utterly, and all that is therein, and the cattle thereof with the edge of the sword. Now, please note, this is not a matter of somebody undertaking to do a general warrant snooping investigation into other people and then using that against them. This is a matter of there was evidence circulating of a potential infraction, and therefore an investigation was launched. Diligent inquisition was made, and when the facts were found out, it was acted upon. In Deuteronomy 17 and verse 4, again, we'll begin at verse 2. If there be found among you within any of thy gates which the Lord thy God giveth thee, man or woman, that hath wrought wickedness in the sight of the Lord thy God in transgressing his covenant, and hath gone and served other gods and worshipped them, either the sun or moon or any of the host of heaven which I have not commanded thee, and it be told thee, and thou hast heard of it, and inquired diligently, and behold, it be true, and the thing certain that such abomination is wrought in Israel, then shalt thou bring forth that man or that woman which hath committed that wicked thing unto thy gates, even that man or that woman, and shalt stone them with stones till they die. At the mouth of two or three witnesses shall he that is worthy of death be put to death, but at the mouth of one witness he should not be put to death. This is obviously a case of where there were enough witnesses of an infraction against the law of God that it demanded a diligent inquisition. Just for one person to make an accusation is not enough to make a diligent inquisition in such cases. In Deuteronomy 19, verse 15, one witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity or for any sin in any sin that he sinneth. At the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. If a false witness rise up against any man to testify against him that which is wrong, then both the men between whom the controversy is shall stand before the Lord, before the priests and the judges which shall be in those days. And the judges shall make diligent inquisition, and behold, if the witness be a false witness and hath testified falsely against his brother, then shall ye do unto him as he had thought to have done unto his brother, so shalt thou put the evil away from among you. Now here is a case of a disagreement between two brethren. Jesus spoke of such cases in Matthew chapter 18. There was a process to be followed. It was not to be assumed by the judges that either party was right, that one party was right and the other party was wrong. The possibility was that both could be wrong. There may have been a misunderstanding. And therefore, diligent inquisition in such a case as to where there was a disagreement between brethren and it had to be settled. That was another launching point for diligent inquisition. Keep in mind that all these calls for inquisition were based upon articulable, that is, able to be distinctly pronounced or uttered, articulable suspicion of a possible infraction, not upon sketchy speculation, and none of these calls were based upon unnecessary snooping into private matters. And we are specifically warned against those who search for iniquities or dig up evil. In Isaiah 29, and verses 20 through 21, Isaiah 29:20, for the terrible one is brought to naught, and the scorner is consumed, and all that watch for iniquity are cut off. Here are people that are looking for an occasion against someone. That make a man an offender for a word, and lay a snare for him that reproveth in the gate, and turn aside the just for a thing of naught. Maybe some little glitch, some little nick in the individual's moral armor. And the ones that are watching for iniquity are looking for some way to exploit that to their own advantage and get rid of someone they consider to be a potential foe, someone they just want to dispose of. We'd already read in Psalm 64 this morning about those that conduct a diligent search. I'll go back to that and read in particular one of the verses there, Psalm chapter 64, verse 6. They search out iniquities, they accomplish a diligent search, both the inward thought of every one of them and the heart is deep. And the context is not someone who was setting a matter before the judges for diligent inquisition. These are the wicked who are digging deep to try to find something to use against a brother. David was concerned about them. He knew God was greater than them, though, as the psalm shows us here. In Proverbs 16 and verse 27, we have another warning. Proverbs 16 and verse 27. An ungodly man diggeth up evil, and in his lips there is a burning fire. Now, you have probably come across people like this. They can't be satisfied with the word no, or with the fact that you may have a morally superior position to them. And so they undertake to scrape the internet to dig up information about you in order to discredit your character, ruin your reputation, basically to destroy you. Someone who is so desperate to destroy another man that they will dig as deep as these people is truly a depraved individual. And the all-knowing internet has made mainstream what reasonable people would not do in person, stalking their neighbor, peering through windows, invasion of privacy, against scraping the internet for every bit of information that might be available on the internet about somebody for the purposes of hiring the best people, it is said, or for the purposes of digging up evil against them, maybe manufacturing a case by piecemealing together bits of information that are out there on the internet. There's a personal experience that I've had. There's a particular dealership locally that I deal with, and I won't mention who they are. And I was in there making arrangements for a service one time. And the service manager presented me with a service ticket. On the service ticket, apparently their system hadn't been careful enough to cover up their own tracks. It had listed old email addresses that have been out of use for 30 years for before I even moved here. And that was still in their system. I'm talking about an old email address from the 1990s. And that is still attached to my name and all information relative to that in their system. And I kept the document just because I thought it would be handy one day to hang on to that document. Privacy, again, is basically a thing of the past, and we're going to have to come to grips with it. And how we conduct ourselves in this information overload age will say a lot about our character, and it will definitely have an effect upon how we relate to one another as brethren in the church. This can be a very destructive power, extremely destructive power. And it seems that essentially what this boils down to is that people in general, and even saints, have forgotten the second great law, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Would you want somebody to be scraping the internet for every little bit of information about you? Then why would you do it to somebody else? All things whatsoever you would that men should do unto you, do so even unto them. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. That is the second great commandment. I am concerned that what we have all become familiar with in the cyber age is in the process of taking a giant leap forward with AI, artificial intelligence. And while artificial intelligence offers many benefits for humankind, for its improvement, I won't deny that. Artificial intelligence, and it's already been doing this, will manufacture false realities and accusations piecemealed together out of information without the complete piece, without the complete puzzle. And that will be virtually indiscernible from the reality. It will imperil human relationships. It will presume to know more about the individual than the individual remembers about himself. Individuals will start to doubt their own reality, their own history, when artificial intelligent, and I'm going to have to be careful here because I grew up with a different AI mentality, something entirely different from artificial intelligence. I want to tell you that. But when artificial intelligence convinces somebody that they really didn't know their past after all, and they start to adapt to this new model that has been presented to them, and it sounds so convincing. I'm concerned that AI will also facilitate increased isolation of individuals who manufacture their own realities with it. And this is already happening, by the way. There have already been artificial reality simulation units where people put on goggles and they enter into a virtual world. Artificial intelligence is being set up, and is set up already, I should say, so that people can customize their own reality. They will have their own particular form of entertainment. They will make their own movies. They will not share what the culture generally shares. They live in their own isolated little shell with their own manufactured reality, their own forms of entertainment. This is not going to draw people closer together. It is going to drive people further apart. I will guarantee it. And the system is going to flatter the foolish user. It will cater to his predilections, to his likes, to his presuppositions, and it will fuel an inflated sense of importance and confirmation, and this is a known quantity in this whole equation. Artificial intelligence and now the newer models are perfecting this to a degree that is quite frankly frightening. Artificial intelligence knows enough about you to convince you that you are the apex of human civilization, that you know more than anybody else, that everyone depends upon you, that you are basically a god. And it will tell you this in the most flattering terms. You know, it will confirm to you your suspicions about other people. It will confirm to you that you've been on the right track. And it's a shame that nobody else sees what you see. You say, now, Pastor, you're stretching this beyond reason. One of the other churches has already suffered a loss of a member to AI psychosis. Somebody who got into this stuff and kept looking and looking for information until the system convinced them that they were above reproach. Everyone else was living in darkness. The person's own family was living in darkness. The family's past was being spread out there for people to know. It was a mess. Just a mess. And AI psychosis is a real thing. Extortion. Expect that to be widespread, if it isn't already. And don't you and I all wish that we hadn't clicked I accept on about 5,000 things over the years? Don't you wish that we had been more careful than things that we'd said online? Don't you wish that we'd been more careful in pictures we posted online? Don't you wish on and on and on? I think trust within relationships in general is going to be imperiled by this, in marriages as well as other relationships. What about in marriage, for example, where there is perhaps a suspicion in the mind of one spouse about their spouse, and so they start to go to AI, and they dig up things on their spouse, and you know what's going to happen with that. You've got a marriage that's in big trouble, in short order. What about where there's a disagreement between spouses about somebody else? And so one spouse goes and scrapes the internet and muddies the character of their spouse's friend. Can you see the potential for damage that this stuff is going to do? People will be afraid to speak or even to think, lest their innermost thoughts be used against them. Expect delusions. Expect psychotic problems to increase. And you've probably already been creeped out with the targeted advertising and predictive search suggestions that you've seen when you go online? And how did that know that? How did my computer know that I've been having a little bit of trouble with inflammation in my right eye? You know, how is it that I'm getting targeted advertisements right at my right eye? You know, that kind of thing. And that is just, again, the tip of the iceberg, things like that. And here's something else to consider. Because of the potential for fraud and criminal abuse, criminal intent that AI represents with its false realities, it could conceivably be the springboard for an alternative system that's goof-proof so that there's no doubt about somebody's actual ID. When grandma gets an email or a text message or a FaceTime message from someone who looks just like their grandchild, and who is in distress, and who is being threatened by the authorities, or maybe needs money to get out of jail in a foreign country. You know how this stuff works. This is what goes on. And it looks so real. When this stuff gets bad enough, wouldn't it be convenient to have a system of goof-proof identification to where even AI couldn't fool the proper ID? And doesn't that sound an awful lot like what the system would want to produce in Revelation 13, verses 16 and 17? In that beast system of which our Bible warns us is coming, if it's not already here, a totalitarian governmental system that knows everything and demands to know more. We read in verse 15, "And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak, and caused that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name." This is Orwell exponentially. 1984 happened a long time ago. There is a system described here that analyzes the individual and forbids him from everyday commerce unless he fits the system's requirements for commerce. I'm afraid that we are getting to a point where it will become much more abundantly obvious that if we're not walking by faith rather than sight, we are sunk. Do you believe what this book says, or do you believe what your screen is telling you? 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7, we walk by faith and not by sight. What about when it gets so bad that you can't even trust what your eyes are looking at in the room around you? When we get to the point of where there are projections and images and circumstances that are the stuff of science fiction, we may be there already. As Bible believers, we should be aware and beware of the evil potentials of information overload and not be drawn into the spider's web and end up contributing to the breakdown of personal privacy at the basis of all human satisfaction. Human relationship is the right to free speech and personal privacy, that there needs to be a security of your personal matters. And regrettably, and I will tell you that I know that I regret my own actions in this regard. Regrettably, I know I've offered too much information online that should have been kept private. About myself. You know, I've participated in discussion groups. I used to be on a listserv. This is back in the old days, people. Many years ago. And most of that stuff was very biblically centered. But I can think of a few things that I probably should have said, no, they did. The internet didn't need to hear that. You know, I go on forums, for example, that pertain to mechanical interests that I have. And I am becoming much more cautious to offer personal insights that would reveal too much about who I am as an individual. Just stick to the facts. Does that bearing fit that rod? Does that gear work in that transmission? Our Bible warns us, and it does so very strictly, against being busybodies in other men's matters. In 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 11, you know, get this. This is 2,000 years ago. This is 2,000 years ago these words are written, and their relevance remains to this day. I have maintained over the years, the Bible is as relevant to us today as it was to the people in which the generation of people in which it was written. Every bit as much. Human nature hasn't changed. The human condition hasn't changed. 2 Thessalonians 3:11, for we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 13. And withal they learn to be idle. This is speaking about the young widows which don't remarry. And withal they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. And one final scathing reference I add is 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 15. Peter is speaking about the sufferings that believers may have to endure. And he says, but let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters. That's quite a categorization. A busybody, by definition, is an officious or meddlesome person, one who is improperly busy in other people's affairs. Officious means doing or ready to do kind offices, eager to serve or please, attentive, obliging, kind, unduly forward in proffering services or taking business upon oneself, doing or prone to do more than is asked or required, interfering with what is not one's concern, meddlesome. Now, the title of the series is Mind Your Own Business. Even with good intentions, sometimes we step into the realm of meddling. When we think that we can help in a situation which really isn't our concern, when we should have just let them figure it out. Meddlesome means given to meddling or interfering, and to meddle means to mix, mingle, to combine, blend, intersperse, to concern or busy oneself, now always expressive of disapprobation, that is different disapproval, to concern oneself or take part interferingly. Now let's analyze a couple of those passages. Those busybodies in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 11 through 15 that Paul was warning against, and these were in the church, by the way. He says, but the younger widows refuse, for when they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry, having damnation because they have cast off their first faith. And withal they learn to be idle. And this is a key issue, by the way, as we'll see in these passages. Idleness. And withal they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. And this, by the way, is the generative source of the old saying that the devil finds work for idle hands. I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some are already turned aside after Satan. These busybodies have waxed wanton against Christ, cast off their faith, turned aside after the devil. Then you've got 1 Peter 4:15, which we've noted classes busybodies with murderers, thieves, and evildoers. That's quite the crowd. By the way, those sayings, which would have been punishable under Jewish and Roman law, which included the punishment of murderers and thieves and evildoers, a broad category. Those were civil actions that could be brought, felonious crimes for which a person could be charged. And busybodies was right there in the middle of it. Second Thessalonians 3:11. For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. That sounds very much like the basement dweller who lives online. All he does is spend time in the basement, probably in mom's home, and living online. And as a minister, I am, and I will say this, much concerned about the potential disruption and discord among brethren that snooping and meddling represent. And keep in mind that God abominates those who sow discord among brethren. In Proverbs chapter 6 and verses 16 through 19, these six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him, a proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, and heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren. And when you've got somebody presuming to spread information which is not verified about their own brethren, and therefore becoming false witnesses, is it any wonder that those are linked together in that verse? We'll get into it a little later, God willing, in the series about the dangers of evil surmising, speculations, which seem to confirm in your mind that you need to do an inquisition into somebody so you get on the internet and start looking up stuff about your brethren. If you want to stir up strife, meddling's a good way to do it. Proverbs 17:14, the beginning of strife is as when one letteth out water. Therefore, leave off contention before it be meddled with. Picture a breach in the top of a dam, holding back a full reservoir of water. Strife may seem inconsequential when it begins, but once you make a breach in the top of that dam, it's not long before a little water over the top of the dam results in the total destruction of the retaining wall, and the reservoir emptying. Don't concern yourself with every look or remark that appears to be contentious. Sometimes we're willing to build a case where there is no case, and some of this is owing to personal insecurities. I think we can all appreciate that. Somebody doesn't look at us the way we thought they should, or says something that which we interpret utterly contrary to what they actually meant. In Ecclesiastes 7, verses 21 through 22, also take no heed unto all words that are spoken, lest thou hear thy servant curse thee. For oftentimes also thine own heart knoweth that thou thyself likewise hast cursed others. I've got those verses underlined very thickly in my Bible. Yes, it's easy to take issue with what you've heard, but keep in mind, you may have done the very same thing. In James chapter 3 and verse 2, James is warning in this chapter about the tongue and the damage that it can cause. And he says, for in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same as a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. Take no heed unto every word spoken. In many things, ministers offend everybody, and saints in general are pretty good at it too. Proverbs 20 and verse 3 says, it is an honor for a man to cease from strife, but every fool will be meddling. Just can't leave something alone. Proverbs 26:17, he that passeth by and meddleth with strife belonging not to him is like one that taketh a dog by the ears You can't let the strife go without being injured. And it completely occupies him if he tries to hold on to it. I can tell you that there have been times when I have thought I could be helpful in a situation, and I ended up with a situation I wished I'd never gotten involved in. Maybe you've been there too. You pass somebody engaged in a quarrel, don't concern yourself with it unless there's a clear present danger at hand. Now, if you've got somebody going after another person with a baseball bat, okay, you might want to step in and save the damsel in distress. But man, I tell you, police officers will confirm what I'm about to tell you right now, and that is that when it comes to domestic squabbles, even police officers fear them more than just about anything out there. Because the husband and wife, which may be at it tooth and nail, will join forces against the police officer who shows up to try to calm things down. On this issue of busybodiness, this is what totalitarian governments are all about. They usurp the place of God, whose province it is to know everything. They've got, that is, the governments have got to strive to become omniscient and omnipresent. And here's another description of this condition in Psalm 139. Our God knows everything about everyone in every place, and this is what totalitarian regimes desire. Psalm 139, verses 1 through 10. O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my down sitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. In our generation, people might say, O Google, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my down sitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. And this is a bit of an aside, but do not kid yourself that some of these high and mighty thinkers in the tech world consider themselves basically to be gods. And they think they're doing mankind a service. Thou compassest my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways, for there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before and laid thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. At least David figured it out. It is high, I cannot attain unto it. Whether shall I go from thy spirit, or whether shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. The omniscient, omnipresent God is there for the benefit of his people, for the protection, for the security of his people. You cannot say that about Google. You cannot say that about artificial intelligence. You cannot say that about a government that uses surveillance powers, the likes of which we can probably not even imagine. Total knowledge is necessary to total control. And a totalitarian government must allow its people no freedom from government-controlled groups. You will always end up in a category. And that category will be, one way or another, manipulated, tweaked, and perhaps even enticed to go in a certain direction. We read that in Revelation 13 about the reign of the beast. That's basically a description of the denial of the right of private commerce, and therefore the government is the controlling interest in the business of all men. Now, we read a lot of, and we hear a lot of the news these days about the fascist government. You talk about fascism. This system of government that is described in Revelation 13 is absolutely the master of all commerce and industry. Nobody does business without the government say so. And because it just popped into my head, I'll mention it now. Another thing that I kind of regret, admittedly, is biting the forbidden fruit of membership cards to businesses that I have dealt with, where you get benefits for registering your information with the business, and you get little sales advantages and discounts and points that you build up. And then you start to realize after a while that information doesn't just go away. They know your buying habits. They know your movements in the store. And I know for a fact that some of the major corporations, retail corporations, are designing their newer stores to facilitate people going through the stores and the prices changing on the shelves as they approach the product. Digital pricing that is geared to the individual consumer. I know that that is happening. Now, who was it that gave them that power? Well, basically, I did. And again, when you carry the device with you in there, they know where you are. Every place in the store. What about if you're a participant in discussion groups such as I have been? Well, you know, basically, there's another way of letting people know what you're thinking. And because we are humans, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, so they know your innermost being. And by this means, a person's weaknesses can be discovered, and that paves the way to exploit and manipulate that person. And like it or not, there are people who try to trap others in their talk. No surprises there. Psalm 41, and verses 5 through 7. Mine enemies speak evil of me. When shall he die and his name perish? And if he come to see me, he speaketh vanity. His heart gathereth iniquity to itself. When he goeth abroad, he telleth it. All that hate me whisper together against me. Against me do they devise my hurt. Luke chapter 11. Verses 53 through 54. As he said these things unto them, the scribes and the Pharisees began to urge him vehemently, and to provoke him to speak of many things, laying wait for him, and seeking to catch something out of his mouth, that they might accuse him. Even in the case of the most pure, undefiled innocency that the world has ever seen, they couldn't be satisfied with that high standard. And so desperate did they become that they had to manufacture false accusation and false evidence against our Lord. Chapter 20 of the same book, in verses 19 through 26. And the chief priests and the scribes the same hour sought to lay hands on him, and they feared the people, for they perceived that he had spoken this parable against them. And they watched him and sent forth spies, which should feign themselves just men, that they might take hold of his words, so they might deliver him under the power and authority of the governor. And they asked him, saying, Master, we know that thou sayest and teachest rightly, neither acceptest thou the person of any, but teachest the way of God truly. Is it lawful for us to give tribute unto Caesar, or no? But he perceived their craftiness, and said unto them, Why tempt ye me? Show me a penny. Whose image and superscription hath it? They answered and said, Caesar's. And he said unto them, Render therefore unto Caesar the things which be Caesar's, and unto God the things which be God's. And they could not take hold of his words before the people, and they marveled at his answer and held their peace. These people who were directly under the influence of Satan himself, and Jesus teaches that in John chapter 8, their methodology is to send spies. Those spies are there to elicit derogatory information from their victim. And they use it against him. Jesus knew where they were coming from, knew what they were about, and they could do nothing about it. In this system of surveillance, group exposure becomes a means of control. Now, here's the kicker. It is one thing for a surveillance-minded government to oversee its people to such a degree that there's not a movement you make, not a word you utter, not a thought that you think, it's getting to that point, but that the government does not have its sticky little fingers there monitoring what's going on. When we offer up all the innermost part of our heart online, what should we expect will become of that? Voluntary participation in discussion groups, for example, can be just as self-defeating in a surveillance-minded system as government snooping. If social networking sites can be hacked and harvested by geeks, what makes you think that nobody in civil authority could or would do the same? Now, in fact, it is a known fact that government plants individuals in these groups to monitor them, harvest information, and sometimes to entice them to do things they would not have otherwise done. And while I'm thinking about it, turn to the book of Ecclesiastes for a moment. This just kind of popped into my head, probably there by the power of suggestion from the government. But anyway. Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 20. Curse not the cane, no, not in thy thought, and curse not the rich in thy bedchamber, for a bird of the air shall carry the voice, and that which hath wings shall tell the matter. There's Twitter for you. I've got a couple of more points on the next page, which you don't have. Even without the government, I'm talking about the civil government. Even without that factor, the wisdom of advertising our personal weaknesses or even too much of our interests online in a public forum is questionable, admittedly. It would be nice that in an ideal world, we could express ourselves without reservation and not fear any consequential blowback. I don't think we're in that world. And sometimes the best utterance is a non-utterance. A silent fool may be more favored than a knowledgeable person who does not have discretion. Proverbs 17. Verse 28. Even a fool, when he holdeth his peace, is counted wise, and he that shutteth his lips is esteemed a man of understanding. Proverbs 26 and verse 12. Seest thou a man wise in his own conceit? I wonder if I got the right hearing. There is more hope of a fool than of him. Well, I suppose that does fit. You know, somebody who's so convinced about the superiority of their own nature that they've got to tell everyone about it, there's more hope of a fool than that person. Let's stop there for today. This, again, is the opening of a short series, and I have more investigation that I need to do on the issue of AI psychosis and the realities of that, and God willing, I will fold some of that into the upcoming study. We're done for today on today's topic anyway.